Why, hello there. Thanks for listening to The Joy of Yes with me, your host, Graham Pate. My special guest for the next two episodes is Karen Brown Fernell, General Manager of Rapid Fire Theatre in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Hello, everyone. I'm glad that you're here with me. I'm with my good friend Karen Brown Fernell, who is the General Manager of Rapid Fire Theatre in Edmonton.
For now, yeah.
For now? Is there gossip here?
I don't think it's gossip now. Okay. I mean, there's a pretty public inquiry, a public search going on to find a new general manager. And I'm not entirely sure when that person's going to start. I would say spring to late spring of 2020, so that they can have an overlap and a training and mentoring and all that sort of stuff and be the new GM in total control, making all the decisions by September of 2020.
So how long have you been general manager?
It will be 21 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, coming January, 21 years.
But you're not fully retiring. You're not just saying, I've had enough.
No,
I'm
can't. I can't you're hold not myself to. Away.
I'm not letting you.
I know. Well, that's, you know, it's very, very hard because this is my baby as much as it is all of the artists. I'm just changing my focus and my role because, and I'm not sure how far I can go with announcing this, but we are looking to finally move into our forever home. And we're very excited because we're closer now than we've ever been before. That's pretty much all I can say about that. But that will be my focus. The building, the new home, the build.
Just getting everything moved and just organized it all.
Well, and renovations. We have to, and funding. We have to find the money to pay for it. And then the money for the renovations to make it a beautiful forever home. Wow. And then once we are in, whether we're in and we're doing this in phases, which is most likely what's going to happen, is we'll come in and we'll live in it as livable as it is. And we will slowly make changes and upgrades to it to turn it into what we want. And it could take a number of years for us to come up with the financing and the social funding and all of the things, the fundraising that we need to get there. And I will be there to shepherd that along. But focusing on that aspect of Rapid Fire as opposed to the day-to-day operations of Rapid Fire. And then ultimately have a neat little compact part-time couple days a week job just managing the space, booking rentals and coordinating schedules and workshops versus rehearsals versus shows. Mm. That'd be swell.
Well, I was going to ask you what is it you do as a general manager, but I think you pretty much nailed pretty much all of that. Your day-to-day stuff and dealing with buildings.
Do you know what the really annoying thing, and every arts administrator will say this, is the most annoying thing about being in this role is you spend 90% of your time looking for money.
Yeah.
You spend so much effort trying to find grants that will support you, applying for grants that will support you, creating final reports for funders who have given you grants that will support you, trying to find ways to make the activities that you're doing dovetail with ridiculous comprehensive boxed in grant requirements and then just managing it all and trying to keep your hand on the money so that you don't go broke.
Has it been easier to that as the years go by because you kind of know all the ropes, you know how things work, you know people?
No.
Really?
No. It doesn't get easier because it gets more complex. Because when I started with Rapid Fire, we did one show a week. We did one festival a year and we booked about 8 corporate gigs. That was it. So it was really easy. I mean, it seemed like a lot when I came into it to manage all of that, but it was nothing compared to what we're doing now in terms of just scale, yeah. The number of things that we do and the number, I mean, the budget when I first came in was about $80,000 a year. That was it. Wow. That was our whole operating budget. And last year we just finished $1.04 million in the annual operating budget.
That's
so
amazing.
It's grown a bit.
A tad.
So as a result, there's more financial oversight. There's more planning that has to be done. And we just have, we're like an octopus. We just keep sending out tendrils in different directions. And that means I got to go try and find funding that's specific to these tendrils that we're sending out. I mean, it's amazing and it's wonderful. And the impact and the outreach.
What kind of tendrils do you mean?
The outreach program. Probably my best and favoritest is the outreach program. Because that program has, it's in its 10th year now.
What is it exactly?
It's the inner city educational program for at-risk teens. So we offer it predominantly at Boyle Street Education Center, but we also have done so at iHuman. We've worked with the folks at John Humphrey. We are connected with the Fresh Start program in Mill Woods. We have worked with Amiskwichi. We have worked with just, you try and find an organization that can benefit from the workshop, and then we try and find a way to get the workshop into that organization. And sometimes, most times, they have no money. So in order for us to pay the artists to go in and teach, we have to find the funding.
Teaching improv, clearly.
Teaching improv, using improv as a way to elevate self-esteem, using it as a way to encourage self-expression without being, destructive or violent. And the kids that we are affecting with this program are really at risk. These kids they come from difficult home situations. Attending school at all is a challenge for them. Whether or not they eat on a regular basis is another thing. They're dealing with violence. So it's really an outlet for them, and it has worked. It has proven itself over and over, because Boyle Street has always been our control, because we've been in Boyle Street since the beginning, and we have tried it in other schools and in other programs, but Boyle Street has always been the one that we can compare it to, because Boyle Street is consistent and we're still there after 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That must be quite exciting to see these kids kind of growing up and seeing the impact that improv has had on them.
It's amazing. It's amazing. We see some kids who are now young adults who have come through Boyle Street, and they still come and check in. They check in with Jolene, or they'll come in and check in with us periodically. Boyle Street kids have an open door at Rapid Fire. So sometimes they take advantage of that, not as often as we'd like, but they are they're growing, and they're growing up, and it's really cool to see what has become of some of them. We had a young lady came and visited in the spring, and she brought her two little babies with her, and she's very happy, and she's stable, and she's confident, and she was a wreck when she was at Boyle Street. Mm. And that was in part due to her participating in the workshops.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. She became a volunteer for a little while. She volunteered for a little bit, but then she started making babies, so it got difficult for her to be available.
It's interesting you talk about seeing these people from Boyle Street growing up. But that's 21 years you've been at Rapid Fire. So you've seen a lot of artists come and go as well. You've seen a lot of artists grow.
Yeah.
So are there certain artists that just stick in your mind as people that maybe people who my listeners might know? I can think of one or two. But can you think of some artists that you've seen come in fresh-faced, and you've seen you've charted their growth and charted their improv journey?
I think probably the best example is a couple of guys who are still connected with Rapid Fire, and they came in at the same time as I did. So they also are looking at 21 years with Rapid Fire Theater, and that's Joe Vanderhelm and Julian Fade. And they came in as, 16-year-old high school kids and started playing, and they stuck with the company and have remained with the company, and they're still with the company. And so I've seen them grow up and continue their education, complete their education, become professionals. I've watched them in and out of their various relationships. I've watched Joe become a father. It's like he's part of the family. And I think that they have that same kind of attitude towards me, because I've been a part of their life, a fixture, just like a teacher or an auntie that's always been around. So that's probably one of the best examples of kind of an enduring and long-term relationship. But also, without getting too nostalgic, some of the guys from the past, some of the artists that we've seen come through who've gone on to bigger and better things, or who are still around, but just more sporadic, like Mark Meir, because Mark was just a kid when I started. But then again, I was just more of a kid anyway when I started. And well, yeah, it's true. We were young. We were young then. But yeah, I don't know. Also, Jacob Bannigan. We have become much closer as he's moved away, which is crazy, because when he was AD and I was GM at the beginning, we had some rough patches. We had to learn how to work with each other, and we were not symbiotic. It did not always work well, but we both have gained more and more respect for each other as the time goes by. And now when I see him, it's a lovely reconnection with an old friend. And so.
That's right. Well, I can only imagine the number of relationships you've made over the years, 21 years as a general manager, you've seen a lot.
And it's not just rapid fire people too.
Yeah.
It's people around the world, because rapid fire has afforded me the luxury of meeting artists from all over the globe. From, I have a very dear friend in, the only other arts administrator at the time when I was doing it, the only other one in the improv community that was not performing, was Paula Forbes, and she's from New Zealand, and we just clicked right from the beginning. We had to, because we were thrust together all the time, because we didn't have, we were the only ones that weren't artists, so we had very similar situations. And I have lost touch with her recently, but that's just an example of someone that, oh, I'm going to New Zealand, I'll just give Paula a shout and pop by and visit with her. And that's where
pop by. I'm going to pop by to New Zealand.
I'm just going to pop by while I'm in New Zealand. But it's just really nice to say, oh, I know someone in Berlin. Oh, yes, I have friends in London. You know, that kind of thing.
Wow.
That's nice.
But on top of doing the GM stuff, you're also the president of Theatre Sports.
Yes, the International Theatre Sports Institute. Kind of got roped into that. But, and that's, again, that's because of relationships. Because Patty Stiles, who was the artistic director at Rapid Fire Theatre before me, so I never worked with her as artistic director, but I got to know her really well, because she would come back to play, or she would come back for festivals, that sort of thing. And then when the ITI required an overhaul, it was Patty who did it almost single-handedly. She rebuilt it because it was literally burning itself out, and she resurrected it. And then she brought me in and said, okay, now you take it over from here. So Patty and I worked together for a couple of years. She was the AD of the ITI and I was the president. And now she has moved on and out, and the organization is flourishing, and it's got a really good reputation internationally as a service organization for its members, which is, that was the intent when the ITI was formulated in the first place. So I'm hoping that I'm getting toward the end of my tenure with that, because it's been 6 years, and because it's something that I'm not certain that Rapid Fire is going to want to continue to subsidize so that I can keep on doing this, because it's been very good to me. I've got to travel a little bit and, again, meet more people and share, how do you do things? How do you cast artists? How do you organize festivals? All that sort of stuff. And that's what, for me, the ITI conferences and just the networking. For instance, we had some policies that we were trying to develop, and rather than start from scratch, I just send out the network and just say, okay, does anybody have a policy for managing contributions? And three or four other companies would step up and say, well, here's ours. So then we can use that one as a template and create our own personalized version of that, rather than reinventing the wheel.
So if you're going to be stepping down as GM, although you're going to be busy with this, hopefully the new Forever Home.
I have a new title.
Have you got a title?
I do.
Oh, okay. What's your new title?
I'm going to call myself. I've decided.
Oh, you're
going to
call yourself.
Right? I get to pick my own title. Okay. That was kind of a joy. I really got to define the job itself, what I'm going to be doing going forward.
Okay.
Because I have that luxury at this point, because there's nobody else. And so it's like, well, here are all the pieces that I'm going to pick up, and then we'll leave the rest of it to the incoming GM. But I'm going to
tell me
to
it's Overlord.
I was actually thinking along, you know, Master of the Universe, something like that. But no, it's a little bit more apt. It is Venue Producer.
Venue Producer.
So the very first thing I'm going to do is produce a venue. Ta-da! A venue. Produced.
I still think and Overlord at the end would be
incredible. I'll try to add that in fine print.
Overperson.
Yeah, but I also like when you shorten it, it's VP.
I see there's method to your madness. Mm-hmm. I should know better.
Right. And then after the venue is produced and created and continuing to modify and renovate and add and make it a better and better and better performance space, then it will come down to just managing it. And then that also, venue producer. Who produces the venue? Well, that would still be me.
That's kind of exciting.
Yeah, it is.
So let's say that the being the in that role for, let's say, 4 or 5 years. Let's just assume that for
a moment. Probably be it. Okay. That'd probably be the long.
So after that, so other people I've interviewed have said, where do you see yourself in 5 years? So you've got a very clear goal.
Oh, I see myself on a beach in the south of France. Or Mexico. I don't care. I'm not fussy.
So when in 5 years' time, when you're on a beach in Mexico, I hope you're going to invite me there.
Of course I will.
Okay.
Of course I will.
I hope so.
I will need a cabana boy. So
I'll be your cabana boy? Wow, your expectations are really low.
Just fetch cocktails, spray on sunscreen. That's really all there is to it.
So pretty much what I do now.
Yeah, exactly.
Tune in next episode when Karen and I will continue our very odd conversation about all things to do with improv. Take care.